Hi, I'm Jonathan Fields, and this is Good Life Project. My guest today is Jason Wacob. He is the founder of a really fascinating new healthy living brand that's really kind of exploding all over the place. And super involved in the online world and creating all sorts of educational experiences for people. And we're going to kind of jam not only on what he's creating, but also his personal journey that led him to this place. So awesome to be hanging out today.
Thanks for having me, Jonathan.
You kind of have it us here in your apartment, but you have a really interesting backstory. So like right now you've got this brand called Mind Body Green.
Yep.
And doing all sorts of amazing things with that. And I want to talk about what that is and sort of like where it's come from and where it's going, because I think you're taking it to some interesting places. But the thing that led you to create it, that story, I think is kind of fascinating. It's probably something that a lot of people share in various ways. So take me kind of back to life before any of this was in existence.
So we'll take you back about, I'm 38 now, so I'll take you back 20 years ago. So I was a former basketball player. I played college basketball at Columbia. My number one priority after college was make money, because I didn't have any and I had all this school debt. Columbia is not cheap and there were no scholarships. So I went to work as an equities trader, and I was a trader for 5 years, was able to pay off a lot of that school debt, and had a little bit left over, not enough to retire, but enough where I could take the golden handcuffs off, so to speak. So let me do other things. And I got into startups, and the last startup I ran was an organic chocolate chip cookie company that was in every Whole Foods market in the country. So it was through that company I really started to pay attention to ingredients, eating organic, closer to nature, the connection to the environment and toxins, what we're putting in our homes and our bodies. Met my wife that year, so started to revisit spirituality. And I also flew about 150,000 miles domestic.
Ouch.
Yeah. So I'm 6'7" and me in a little coach seat, not...
I'm like 5'9" and my knees banging against the seat in front of me. Yeah. It must have been evil for you.
It was pretty harsh on my body. And it turned out I had 2 extruded discs in my lower back.
Oh, man.
Very painful. There were days I could barely get out of bed. So 2 doctors told me I needed back surgery. And I really didn't want to get surgery.
At this point, had you also largely, I mean, when you're flying and working that much, you go from being an elite athlete to, were you active at all? Just sort of like,
I was, I've always been active, but I was more of a go to the gym and lift weights type of guy. And that was my form of extra. I looked good, but I probably wasn't as healthy as I could be on the inside. And I didn't understand that connection yet. So then I didn't want to get surgery. I started practicing yoga and I completely healed my back. So I'm fine. Never got surgery.
So, which is, we'll talk about that for a second.
Sure.
Because it's a bold claim.
It's true.
Right? Yeah. And it's a lot of people would not sort of like come out and say, yes, like I basically went this way and everything is totally cool now.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing. You know, it's one of those things where I was at the... It's funny. I've talked about this with other people. It was something I'm pretty optimistic guy. And I kind of thought, you know, whatever happens, I'll be fine. Like if I'll try this yoga thing, if it doesn't work, I'll get surgery. I'll be fine. Like whatever. I'll be fine. Like I'm not going to be in a wheelchair. I'm not going to be hobbling around. Like we'll figure it out. I'll be fine. But I started practicing and, you know, twice a day, just like 4 or 5 poses specifically for my lower back. And within a couple of weeks, I started to get better and better and better. And
so it was more like a therapeutic approach to the practice than go, then just,
I didn't just
go
jump
to
into
a 90
class
minute,
and go, you know,
like level 2 class.
No. And for a while I was kind of afraid to go for that reason. It's like, I got this thing, it's working. Like I don't want to, you know, and I think with yoga, it's very important to find a practice and a teacher that works for you.
So important. I mean, it's funny, you know, obviously I have a background in the yoga world, and when we started the studio that I used to own in New York City, there were a lot of great yoga studios around, but I was coming out of a similar background, and I knew that the people from that world that I was coming out of wouldn't go to most of the studios, even though they were great, because they were too intimidating. They were, you know, like you walk
still
in the door.
Yeah.
And there's so many more studios now. And it's so important, like you said, there are so many people who run from the practice because they walk into one place and they just have an experience that freaks them out, and they think that this is the universe of yoga.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I've been to tons of studios, and I've been in classes, you know, with my wife, and seen experiences like that where It's like you see a new person and they're in the front and the teacher is not, and it's like, oh God, right, like this person will never come back. Yeah. Like, can we, you just want to like grab them and be like, it's okay. Like go to this place and this teacher, you're going to be fine. Like don't give up. But it happens all the time. It's unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, I figured when I owned a yoga studio and I taught and I felt uncomfortable going to a lot of other studios. Right. That was a huge problem.
Right.
You know, so it's awesome that you sort of like were able to take this approach to kind of like move into it very gently and really honoring sort of like what you needed from it rather than just throwing into, you know, sort of taking a chance with anything that was out there.
Right. Well, generally I'm sort of like afraid of those things. Like I'm 6'7", like, yeah, you think like I'm a little, with yoga a lot too, my wife and I, she practices. So like when we go to other cities a lot, I'll like send her first.
Yeah.
She'll come back and
she'll know.
Right. Yeah. She'll be like, yeah, you'd like this one. No, you won't like it. It's too backbendy. Right. You won't like that one, you know? So.
That's awesome. So you start practicing.
Yeah.
And twice a day, a couple poses a day.
Yeah.
I'm curious, how long does it take until you start to feel in your body like, oh, something's happening?
Within like a short amount of, like a couple of weeks, I started to feel, you know, with sciatic pain running down your leg, I was told, you know, the further north the pain goes, the better. The further south goes, worse.
Yeah, right.
So like when it was really, really bad, I was running straight down to my toes. It felt like someone was, it just, I don't even want to describe the feeling. The pain started to subside and move back up. And
the closer it got to your butt. So you could literally like track it.
Sort of.
Huh.
So it started to not, it just started to move further north. I knew it was getting better, then eventually went away.
That's amazing.
So
this is an eye-opening experience for you.
Yeah, it really opened my eyes that I think before I thought health was about going to the gym and looking good and you know, being trim, and you know, health was about weight loss.
Right.
But it was very, through this experience, became very clear that health was not just about weight loss and how you looked, and health was a three-dimensional approach, and it's about having a spiritual practice and feeling good about yourself. It's about moving your body and being mindful about that, which I think why yoga is the best practice you can possibly do. And then it's also about what you're putting into your body and the environment, and it's those three things, you know, hence Mind Body Green. So
I never actually made that connection.
Yeah.
All right. That all makes sense.
You need all of them.
Right.
Otherwise, you're not going to.
So you go from this really personal experience. And you're still working, doing the same thing at this point, or?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, with regards to my yoga practice? I've kind of moved out. Like, I started going to classes.
Right.
And like,
no, but I mean that you're actually like how you're earning your living. Like, at that point.
Right.
You're still like, you're healing yourself through yoga.
Yeah.
You're, like, you're becoming more and more pain-free, but you still got the same gig.
Right. So around that point, I left the cookie company to go full force into starting Mind Body Green. I found two incredible co-founders, who were technical co-founders, who thought it was a fun side project. So they were working nights and weekends, and I left and decided to do it full time.
So let's unpack this, though.
Sure.
Because you shared as if, well, yeah, I founded a company and we just did it. There are a lot of people with great ideas who don't actually do it.
Right.
I mean,
that's my problem. Do it.
It's not a problem.
No, I know.
But it does make you unusual.
Right.
You know, like, so bring me sort of, I mean, for you, is it literally just as easy as you're incredibly risk tolerant and you're just like, yeah, whatever, it'll work out.
I do have a high threshold for risk. I was a trader. So I've always been, and I played basketball, I've always been very comfortable with risk and uncertainty, more so than most people.
Interesting.
But I have my threshold too. And sometimes you get there. It's not easy being an entrepreneur.
It's a huge challenge. So when you decide to do this, are you married at the time? But you're dating.
Yeah, I got married, and I said to my wife, like, I want to do this. I you know, at the time I had done startups before, but nothing in media.
Mm-hmm.
So in retrospect, I was very, very naive going into this one. So I said, you know, give me 6 months, and you know, I think I can make it work. And 6 months turned into, you know, 2.5 years.
Right. What was she doing at the time?
She was working in retail, but like we were both in the space, and she's into wellness. We go to yoga together. She was into wellness. She understood, you know, the mission was to make wellness, is the way I see it, accessible to the masses and not preach the choir. It's about health and this lifestyle, and there was nothing like that out there. And so I wanted to create a media property that, you know, I could that would speak to guys that I played basketball with in college, and they would understand and make something accessible to the masses.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I mean, it's such a similar flavor with what we were trying to do with Sonic Yoga. I mean, the name alone.
Yeah.
We came up with it was, you know, like, I would, you know, do these sort of casual surveys, like, where do you practice yoga? And people couldn't pronounce the name of their studios.
Right, it's a problem.
And like, okay, so you can't remember it, you can't share it. So we're like looking like how, and the whole goal was, how do we keep the power and the essence of it, but lower barriers to participation?
Right. This should be for everyone.
Yeah. You know, like, how do you actually just bring it to the people and make it super accessible, which is what I love about what you're building. I'm curious, though. You said something when you had a conversation, you basically said with your wife. Because the dynamic with startup founders who are in relationships or, you know, partners, marriages, whatever it would be, kind of, I think it's a really interesting point that nobody really talks about or looks at a whole lot. But it can be something that's either devastating for a founder or and the company they're starting to start, or it can be incredibly enabling.
Right.
So you mentioned that you had this conversation, like, give me 6 months.
Right.
Are you open to sharing a little bit more about
that? Yeah, well, it was longer than 6 months, and I have a very understanding why. Yeah. Because, you know, I didn't make money for 2 years.
Nah.
So any money I had saved through, you know, Wall Street, I had blown through, and that wasn't on the site. That was just living expenses, paying rent.
Right.
So for 2 years, you know, my wife floated me, and that's she was very understanding and very supportive, and not everyone can... I kind of knew things would work out, but it was hard. It's hard.
Nah.
You know, I thought it would take 6 months. It took 2 years. Sometimes that happens, but we stuck through it.
Well, and for startups, especially, good rule of thumb is, you know, like, initial guess, like 4x it.
Right. So it took a while.
Nah.
It took a while.
And I imagine a series of, like, it's not just one conversation with, you know, that person who's in it with you. It's like, it's an ongoing series of, okay, how things are going, how much longer are we going to... Right.
Well, now we're fine. Like, now we're a real company. Like, I have a salary, but...
Right, but like, before you have that window where you're like, oh, it's starting, like, there's something that happens where it starts to become clear that there is a trajectory. And even if you're not profitable, you can see, okay, we can see this is actually going to happen.
I didn't know that. So we launched the site with, like, content as you see it sort of today, the first iteration in September of 2009. I didn't know. January 2012, around that time was when I knew we had it. And that was it.
So let me back up a little bit here also. September 2009.
Right.
So you leave a job.
Yeah.
The year that the economy crumbles and everybody is screaming, if you have a job, for God's sake, don't leave it.
Right. Right. Well, it was another startup, so.
Right. But still, I mean, it's just, I'm just sort of like looking at this, sort of like, you have an insane tolerance for risk.
I do. I don't know why I do, but I do. I would say it's been a theme throughout my life. I can be very comfortable. I do have my limits, but for the most part, I could deal with very high levels of risk and uncertainty.
Do you think that has anything to do with having sort of like rituals or practices? Like, to a certain extent, I have to imagine also that being physically active is something that really allows you. Do you think that plays any role in it? Do you think you're just kind of developed an orientation there?
I think I sort of developed an orientation, but I do think it's still like being physically active, having some sort of practice, you have to have some sort of stress reliever. No. I think to some degree, even though my wife always says my back, like, I'm sure my back was stress related in some degree and other health issues I've had and other people, I think there's always, you know, there's absolutely a stress component. Stress is inflammation. So I do think it's important to have something to sort of alleviate it, but still it can only do so much.
Yeah. So you launched in September 2009, you have two other founders.
Yeah.
And the goal is really to democratize health information.
Right.
But having never launched your own company at that point.
Right. Well, I had done, but not in media. So I'd done other companies in different verticals, but like they're all different. Like there are certain startup principles you learn, but...
Well, especially media is a tricky beast, and especially when you launched.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, media properties were crumbling. Advertising dollars were vanishing.
Right.
And you launch a media-based
property.
So that must have been really a really interesting time to figure it out.
Yeah, well, I think it helped to sort of be naive. Yeah. You know, oh, I'll figure it out. And, right. and it eventually did. It just took longer.
So 2009 to 2012, like what right. was, tell me what are, like, how has this thing evolved and
sure.
and what is it now? And also I'm really curious, because it's always kind of fascinating to sort of like look back and say, okay, when you look at what you think it's going to be when you're right. starting it up, is it still that or is it something radically different right. or somewhere in the middle?
Right. Well, I think the mission has always stayed the same, and that's to make wellness accessible to the masses. Mm. And I've always held true to that. And everything we do kind of supports that. Some things we've done well, some things not so well, but as long as that's the consistent theme. But literally, you know, started doing one post a day written by me. And I'm not a very good writer or editor. So literally, and so doing interviews.
You were the content creation team.
I was the content creation team. I'm the social media team, the everything. So literally started that way. One post a day and then up to 2 to 3. And also, I think this was instrumental in the way we kind of evolved. Became friends with a lot of people in the space who were building their own brands, whether they were yoga teachers and nutritionists. A lot right. of them happened to become good friends, just kind of happened organically. And some of them said, hey, like, do you accept guest posts?
Right.
I said, sounds good. Yeah. Let's do it. And things kind of steamrolled from there, and we started to get more submissions. And, you know, we started literally zero traffic in September of 2009. Didn't get to 100,000 unique visitors in a month until January of 2011.
Wow.
Around that time, people started to guest post, started to get more submissions. Then we went to 550,000 unique visitors in January 2012. Mm. It was around that time I knew we were starting to get it. So that's when all the growth started to happen. So January 2012, 550,000 unique visitors. Fast, we went up every month till August 2012. We did 1.2 million uniques. Still just me editing, and like, it was nuts.
Wow.
Didn't raise any money. Didn't my two co-founders were still nights and weekends.
Uh-huh.
Finally decided to raise a little capital. I finally saw, like, okay, this is how we scale. This is how we grow. This is how we can stay true to our mission.
Right.
Then in October, you know, hired, then brought on an ad salesperson, brought on an editor, then my two co-founders came on in January. Now we're a team of seven. So 1.2 million August 2012, 2.2 million January 2013, 3.7 million June 2013, and this month, July 2013, will be 4.3 million. Mm. So all the growth, I joke, we're overnight success over 4 years.
Yeah.
But like, it's...
But it's amazing, right? In almost any entity that, you know, there's, it's like the growth curve is kind of flat to slightly growing, slightly growing, slightly
right.
growing until, you know, it's the classic hockey stick that
exactly.
people
I love
talk
that.
About.
I love that chart.
Right. I mean, but the fascinating thing, right, is, and tell me if this was your experience, is that, because I've talked to a lot of entrepreneurs about this, and if you really ask them honestly, mostly will tell you the day before it started to go like this, they didn't know that was the day it was going to happen.
Right.
Like, they didn't know if they had another couple of years that they were going to have to
right.
survive, or whether, like, and then, like, once it started to happen, it would happen fairly
right.
quickly, but they woke up, like, you know, the day before, and they had no idea that
right.
this was about to hit that tipping
right.
point.
It's interesting. I definitely believe this is, like, my life's mission.
Mm.
This website, this is everything I believe in. It's very personal to me. I've always sort of known in the back of my mind it was going to work. I say a lot, like, I don't know how, I don't know when, but I know it's going to happen.
Mm.
I say that a lot. Mm-hmm. Even though I do believe in goal setting and so forth. So I kind of always thought that, and then it started to kind of go. I didn't believe to that extent. Like, I did not believe. I was looking over, like, projections the other day. I did not think we'd be at over 4 million uniques this month in July. I think that'd be, like, next year. Like, so it's just great
yeah.
to see. So...
So, and you reach a point, and I want to talk more about sort of like what you're building around, you know, like
sure.
what you're actually offering also. But one of my curiosities too is now you shared that, you know, until fairly recently, it was largely you.
Yeah.
And now you have a team of seven people.
Right.
So now there's this whole other thing of, okay, I'm creating something for the bigger community outside.
Right.
But now we have to start thinking about the community that we're building within this organization, the culture, right, and what it's all right about. Talk to me a little bit about this.
Right. Well, we have 1,400 writers around the world who write for us, and they're a big part. Like, we have this incredible community of contributors, and like, I have to attribute, like, they've done such a tremendous job, and we really believe in community and promoting people and within the community and sharing their message. And you know, and then we have our internal team of 7 people, and I absolutely agree, culture is very, very important. Yeah. And we're really, really lucky. Everyone gets along, everyone believes in what we're doing, everyone, you know, no one takes themselves too seriously. And especially at a startup, every hire is you can live or die by a hire. If you have one bad hire in your team of 8, it changes the whole dynamic in the office, and you're kind of screwed.
Yeah.
So we've been very fortunate.
I mean, but how much is fortunate, and how deliberate have you been at sort of like really identifying beliefs and identifying the culture that you want to create and trying to really
A little bit of both. My 2 co-founders, I kind of got lucky.
Yeah. Did you know them for a long time?
We had a mutual friend from a different startup and connected us. And I had met with them and connected and liked them. And we got along and got what we were doing. And they're extremely talented and worked their ass off. And it just worked. And it's always worked. With our ad sales team, just sort of happened. You know, our first ad salesperson, she was at Yoga Journal and reached out about, liked what we were doing, and we kind of developed the conversation, and then she left.
Which is interesting also, because the ad salesperson, very often the salesperson is the one who comes in,
right,
and has the hardest time fitting into the culture.
She fit in. She was our first hire. Huh. And then our second ad salesperson, ad salespeople are really hard to find.
Yeah.
And she came over. We were trying forever to find a second ad salesperson with no luck. And she was on a yoga retreat with our editor, and she was looking for a job, and she was great. So it was, to me, it was like, it was meant
right
to be.
It's a drop from the sky. Yeah.
Yeah. And our editor is my sister-in-law, who, you know, went to Stanford and wrote for the New York Times and has ghostwritten books. And one day, you know, I'm thinking about hiring, and we're having brunch, and she's saying how she just loves to edit. And I'm like, you love to edit. I'm like, now that you're married, do you want to take a huge pay cut and come work for me, and I'll make sure you're happy?
See, how
and
you can I refuse an offer
at
like
6
that?
6 p.m. and you get to do, you know, she's into yoga, she's into all this stuff, and just edit all day. And so, and she's incredible, and she's done. And we even hired a second editor, and that was referred to my mother-in-law's brother's daughter's friend, and he turned out to be great. And I give them a lot of credit for elevating the content, and, you know, everyone on the team, we've like an incredible team, and I give them a lot of credit.
Do you think about, as you're starting to think about, okay, the fact that we're growing a lot faster than I anticipated
right
we're growing, you know, which means we're going to need more people,
right?
And you can grow to a certain size, sort of like the way that you're doing it, and
right
everybody gets the culture and understands there's
right
tight personal relationships, but
right
you know, like, the more people you add to the mix,
right,
you know, the more important it becomes to really define
right
what right those values are and the beliefs, and sort of like
right
and monitor the culture more closely.
Right. We'll see.
Yeah. It's like, talk to me in a month.
Right. I don't know how big. I don't think we're ever. Well, who knows? I think we're more likely to be a company with maybe like 15 or 20 people. I don't see us being a 50 or 100, or, and I think with those types of numbers, it's a little easier to manage, but it's mm-hmm something I think about. It's really, really important.
Yeah. So what is the vision then? I mean, you've gotten to a place where you started in 2009.
Right.
You know, and this is literally just, it's grown out of your own personal experience.
Right.
Saying, wow, there's something bigger. I've been touched by it on a very
right
personal level, and I want to learn more and share more.
Right.
And do it in a way that nobody really seems to be doing it.
Right.
Into something that's succeeding on a pretty amazing level right now. You know, so a couple of things. When you think about where you want to go with it in terms of how you want to serve your community and grow your community,
right,
on that level, Where are you at?
Well, I still think we're really early in this. I think we're very early in this wave of wellness. You know, there are a number of, there's a huge healthcare problem here in the U.S., the obesity and diabetes and just healthcare in general, how astronomical the costs are, and people are fed up, and I think people are starting to get that health isn't necessarily about weight loss, and it's not about popping a pill or searching for what's wrong with, you know, I've got this pain in my arm and running to a doctor, and the health is this lifestyle. So I think we're still early on that, but I think people are catching on. I think we've crossed over. So I'd say, I think one of the reasons why we've grown to 4 million plus uniques a month is people are catching on.
Yeah.
There's this bubble, you know, there's the choir and the bubble of like people live in, you know, New York and Boulder, right, and LA and San Francisco. Right, yeah. And we've outgrown that.
Right.
We see it with the types of emails and comments. People all around the world are, they're getting it. You know, you look at other, you look at companies like, we talk about juice companies, and you know, Starbucks bought a juice company. Starbucks sees an opportunity. They see juice as wellness. You see brands like Whole Foods Market, you know, and there's a lot going on. So in many respects, we're riding the wave and we're early. And the goal is just create a massive media property makes this lifestyle accessible. It all comes down to that.
Right.
Like everyone should be eating more plants and practicing yoga or meditating or breathing. Mm-hmm. So everyone should be doing this.
So has your why evolved at all, or is it still essentially the same?
It's still the same. It's all about health.
Yeah.
And to me, health is about happiness.
Mm.
Like there's all these studies, people talk about why healthy, why they want to look good, why they want to lose weight, why. Right. It's all about, because they want to be happy. They're searching for happiness. So it's this lifestyle solves that problem for a lot of people. No. I think as a society, we'd be a lot better place.
No, I'm in. Preaching to the choir.
Right. No, I know.
I agree. And I do agree. I think you can almost feel a shift happening where it is tipping out into, you know, the rest of the country, the rest of the world on a different level. And I think part of it has to do with maybe like just the epidemics of disease and unease, yep, and traditional medicine, a combination of it being fabulous at treating some things,
right,
and it really struggling at treating other things. A lot of that being, you know, like pain that's in the gray areas,
right,
and which is a lot of what people are suffering and struggling with right now. So people are kind of saying between that and the fact that, at least in this country, you know, like the cost of healthcare is
right,
kind of crazy, that a lot of people are just looking for other ideas and solutions.
And I think the future is a blend of Western and Eastern.
Yeah,
Western is still great at saving lives. Western is great at diagnostics.
Right.
So it's like taking, you know, I'll use my back as an example. So like Western gave me the MRI that said like it's L4, L5, S1.
Hmm.
Then I can take that information and, you know, do my homework, and whether it's acupuncture or yoga, and you can try out alternative treatments that may treat it. So Western is still, and I think, you know, functional medicine is the term for it. There are a lot of doctors that are practicing that. You know, there's a great, one of my favorite lines from Bill Maher, it's on our little mural in our office, is the, you know, someone needs to stand up and say the answer isn't another pill, the answer is spinach.
Hmm.
And sometimes that's true, and I think that coming from a doctor is very powerful. And the fact that there are doctors now who are saying, okay, this is serious, you need surgery or you need medication. And what they're also saying, hey, you need to like change your diet, like lose gluten and see how you feel, or like you're stressed out, let's get some yoga, you know, so that's powerful.
I mean, it's interesting. I'm sure you've had similar conversations. I've had conversations with a number of doctors behind the scenes who essentially said, you know, I would love to be able to say, to recommend certain things,
right?
But I can't,
right?
Because it's not part of what the prescribed guidelines are,
right,
for my profession right now. So, like legally and ethically, according to those guidelines, I actually can't. So my patients are going elsewhere, finding help, and then coming back to me and saying, "This is what did it," and I can. And there's enough research. In the beginning, I think a lot of people were like, "Well, there's no research. It's kind of woo-woo." But it's actually like the bodies of research are growing enough so that.
Right.
Even allopathic medicine can start to say, oh, there's something happening here.
Right.
We have verifiable proof. Not for everything, of course,
right,
but you know, there's enough. And what's interesting is I wonder if a lot of the, like, the real shift inevitably is going to come almost through, like, a groundswell of patients going back to physicians and feeling better by doing things that the physicians would love to guide them to do but can't. Right. And then having the physicians start to ripple that up
right.
to the governing bodies and saying something right. needs to change. And again, like you, I am not anti-doctor or right. anti-traditional medicine in any way, shape, or form. It's tremendous power and tremendous help. Right. And you know, it's amazing at certain things. Yeah. And you know, other approaches are great at you know, the margins also. Right. But yeah, it's, I get this sense that 10 years from now, the way that medicine in this country is going to look will be radically different.
Oh, absolutely. And the power of the mind, too.
Yeah.
And that equation. I don't know if Lisa Rankin has a great sure. book, Mind Over Medicine. So I think science will catch up. And I just think we're at this really interesting phase. So it'll be exciting to see what the future brings.
Yeah, no, completely agree. So with where you're going, I know sure. you started out, you said this is a media company.
Right.
Fundamentally. But you're actually starting to turn the corner and explore turning it into an education company
right.
on a different level too.
Right.
Talk to me a little bit about sure. sort of like what's happening there.
Right. So we just launched actually today video courses. So the idea being you can take courses from people we think are some of the leading experts. So we launched with 3 courses, one in yoga with Tara Stiles. So Tara Stiles is this tremendous yoga teacher, and she literally walks you through, it's 6 hours of video content, everything from Tara explaining how to breathe, what yoga is, what yoga isn't, walking through every pose, walking through sequences, full-length classes. It's there's nothing, there's like a ton of yoga DVDs and tons of sites that do streaming and so forth, but nothing that really presented yoga in a way that if you had zero practice, you could take this as a class from start to finish and feel good about, okay, like I can practice yoga now. And we did the same thing with meditation with this incredible teacher, Charlie Knowles. He walks you through everything from breathing to mindfulness to Vedic meditation to, it's just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third course is with Rich Roll about eating a plant-based diet, who I know is who's been on your couch. And these are all courses. What I love about this is I think if someone wants to get healthy tomorrow, I think the 3 things I'd recommend would be yoga, meditation, and eating more plants.
Right.
And with these people teaching you in video, it's just really powerful and it kind of makes sense. And, you know, we saw a lot of interaction on the site where people would read an article maybe about meditation and they're all pumped and you see in the comments, it's like, we leave them hanging. Like there's, they can't learn it.
Right. Now what?
You know, there aren't meditations that they're, you know, people, if you live in Des Moines, Iowa, you know, you may not have a great meditation teacher readily available. So hopefully we kind of fill that gap and people can see the courses on our site.
Yeah. And it's what's interesting also is it's a continuation of the original thing for you, which is it's about sort of like starting at zero.
Right.
And making it easy for that person to like go from zero to
absolutely
like, to beginning to adopt it. And I think that's also definitely, it's a missing, I mean, there's a lot of beginning stuff, but a lot of it's kind of tailored towards the next level beginner.
Yep.
What I found being like in the yoga industry is that a lot of teachers didn't want to teach the beginner stuff.
Right.
Because they're like, oh, we have more fun when we can teach more advanced students. We can do more with them. We can, so there, a lot of teachers sort of like they would start out and they couldn't wait to sort of like, you know, like get their chops and get to the place where they were teaching the more advanced classes. When there's such a demand for like genuinely compassionate, insanely knowledgeable people at the point of entry, you know, whether it's live, whether it's streaming, whether it's, you know, DVDs, whatever it is, to take the most talented people and have them really break it down and explain how to like go from zero to sort of like beginner.
Yeah, in a simple way that, you know, maybe lose the Sanskrit and like explain to people, you know, you don't have to be flexible to do this pose. And you know what? Like alignment's important, but like if your toe's not in this direction, you're going to be okay. And that's important because I generally believe if everyone did a little yoga, they'd be a lot healthier and happier.
Nah.
And everyone already, you know, 20 million people practice yoga in the U.S.
Like,
that's a lot, but it's a small number.
Right, compared to who it could be.
Yeah, so we're hoping to further that.
When we opened the studio, so we opened in November 2001, and then coming into the first owner, because it's a seasonal business when you right. share a location. And I kind of knew that we needed to get something through it. And I wanted to get something that would take yoga onto the national stage
right.
In a different way. So I realized that if I could connect it with some sort of bigger consumer trend,
right.
I could get a lot of people right. coming to the practice. And I didn't really care why they were coming to it.
Right.
I just knew that once they started practicing,
right.
over time they would start to feel something that they may not have intended in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
But that would bring them deeper into it, and they would keep the practice.
So, right.
So we focused on, and at that time there was no legit study that actually measured how many calories the style of yoga that we taught burned.
Oh, really?
So we went to university, to Adelphi University, and we did the first ever university study, the metabolic cost of vinyasa yoga.
Oh, no way!
And so we had yogis literally in a laboratory with face plates and tubes coming out of them, measuring their oxygen exchange right. every 6 seconds and taking blood at the
right.
end. And it was crazy. And the results were pretty astonishing
right.
to the team there. And when we shared that, and Self Magazine at the time
right.
did a thing on it. But what was interesting is there was pushback from the traditional yoga
right.
community
right.
saying you're bastardizing it, you're commercializing it. And I was saying to myself, you know what? This is about finding a point of entry for people.
Exactly.
To a practice that will change them regardless of why they come to it. And
right.
I'm okay with that.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's I hate when it makes the community seem, the yoga community seem a little elitist. Mm. And I absolutely, if you really believe in yoga, the hardest part is getting someone in there.
Right.
And then the yoga will take over from there.
Yeah.
So whatever, I wrote a piece, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek piece years ago, five reasons why dudes should practice yoga. And one of the reasons was women. I mentioned I go with my wife and I say to my single guy friends, best place ever. These are the most incredible women. They're spiritual and so forth. And there were comments who could you write that? And it's come on. If you really believe in yoga, whether it's for weight loss or vanity or what have you, just get someone in there. We're not overflowing. We don't have hundreds of millions of people that we need to kind of get rid of the dead weight. We're not there yet. We need more people in the classroom. So whatever they come for, who cares? And then the yoga will take over. So that's what I kind of believe. And I think part of the yoga community likes to keep it small. That's
yeah,
a problem.
To a certain extent.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is, it's been interesting to see the community evolve over time too.
Yes.
Speaking of evolutions, when you think about the lifestyle that you want to build.
Sure.
Because with a business like this, I'm sure you're looking at this and saying, okay, I'm serving a community, I'm building real business, I'm mm-hmm. helping a lot of people, I'm earning, I'm earning some money.
Right.
But my sense is with you also that, this is also in service of a particular way you want to live your life. I'm
right.
curious what that is.
Well, I think wellness should be fun and for everyone. It needs to evolve beyond the stereotype. And we all know, your hardcore yogi, vegan, meditator with, the beads and the dreads and, wellness is for everyone. It doesn't necessarily, you don't have to be rich or white. This is a lifestyle. I believe everyone should be participating in one way, form, or another.
Right. But for your life, the lifestyle that you want to build, that
sure.
you want this company to sort of serve to a certain extent.
Sure.
What's your perfect day? And is this business or are you designing
right.
it in a way to serve that?
Not really. I still work insanely
right.
hard and long hours. I like that we have an environment that I can wear jeans and flip flops and everyone is free to speak. We all sit together. It's a long row of desks and everyone talks and feels like they can express their opinion and we have fun and we laugh and, we all have our green juice and we're all not perfect and it's just, it's kind of a fun, creative environment where everyone kind of buys into making this lifestyle approachable and fun.
Yeah.
So that to me, that's great. That's
cool.
Everyone gets along.
And there is harmony, peace and harmony.
Yeah. And I think that's that's important.
Yeah.
So that's definitely part of it.
Which circles around to the question that I like to sort of wrap up all these conversations sure. with, which is the name of this is the Good Life Project.
Sure.
So when I offer that term to you, to live a good life, what comes up?
Hmm. That's a tough one. I think I'm living it. I think it's different for everyone. For me, it's, doing what I love to do and being able to spend time with the people I love. And it's that simple. I think it's hard. It took me 10 years to find what I love to do. It was a journey. And I got lucky. I found my wife, and I have a great family, and a mother who's very supportive, and friends. But to me, that's what life's all about. So there's that great like Bob Dylan line. It's something along the lines of like being able to wear sweatpants or do what you love, wake up and do what you love to do. And I'm butchering the line. It's this great Bob Dylan quote, essentially about doing what you love. And I'm very fortunate that I found that. So
awesome. Really interesting to kind of like hear your story and then also be taken behind the scenes of this right. Cool entity that you're building. So I can't wait to see where it's going to be also. Okay. Yeah, like when we have another conversation in a year, it'll be interesting to see just how it's evolved and morphed and how you're sort of experiencing
right.
it.
Right. We'll see.
Yeah.
You never know. Every day is a new day.
Indeed. And happily.
Yes, yes.
So thanks so much for the conversation.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah. I'll find the Bob Dylan quote.
All right. We'll post it. We'll post it at the end. It's like our commitment.
Yes.
So I'm Jonathan Fields. My guest today has been Jason Wacob of Mind Body Green, and signing off for Good Life Project.